Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, our first guest today has written a conversation-changing book for parents and anyone anxious about the impact of devices on our children. To tell us about Generation Zombie, welcome to the show, Dr. Charlotte Armitage.
Hello.
Great to have you join us, Charlotte. Thank you very much. And it's really weird because I just saw this on Sky News yesterday morning, how they're saying, yeah, they were on about smartphones and they were saying that our youngsters are becoming addicted.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunately the case. They're becoming addicted. And the last kind of stat that I have, which I would hazard a guess to say this has changed now and it's probably even higher, but 25% of 3 to 4 year olds own their own phone.
No way. 3 to 4 year olds?
Yeah. Exactly. And I think it's not, and we've got to be really careful, I suppose. It's not a case of sort of saying, you know, bad parents, you shouldn't have done this. Nobody knew. I mean, none of us really, I only know because I've, you know, been researching and writing a book on it, but we didn't really know, and I certainly didn't know, you know, what I know now when my daughter was young about the harms of these devices. And I think that is the issue. I'm pretty sure that when any parent understands the risk, that they will make different choices regarding how they integrate these into the lives of their child.
So can you go through what those risks are? I mean, there's the fact that they become addicted to it, of course, but what other risks are there with continuously being on your smartphone?
It affects it affects physical development. So it affects your musculoskeletal development. So innately, a young child will want to get up and explore the world. We all know those, a toddler who will not sit still, who wants to run around. But this is a really crucial part of their development. So they want to go around, they want to look at things, pick things up. And that's all about them helping to develop muscle strength and coordination and fine and gross motor skills. Now, children are starting school. I mean, in the worst cases, I've heard of children starting school unable to be able to put their hands above their heads because they spent too much time sat at a device. I heard I was told about a child who started school who didn't have enough core strength to sit up in a chair because they were so used to sitting on a sofa. But, you know, these are obviously extreme, but unfortunately becoming far more common. Children starting school unable to hold a pen. Then you've got eyesight, so myopia. We've got record levels of short-sightedness. We've got mental health problems, so an inability to regulate our emotions. It really has an impact on everything. Speech and language is a huge one. 2.5 million children are awaiting input for speech and language at the moment. And I think over a third of children are not school ready by the age that they go to school.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because my grandson was born and brought up in Belgium, and he's just moved to England, because obviously my son's English. So he's just moved to England, and he's just turned 8. And we were worried about what the school would say, because he can speak perfect English, but he's never actually written it. And the school said it doesn't matter anymore. As long as they can type it on their phones or on a computer, they don't need to write. And I think that's such a sad thing.
Oh, well, it is, because writing is about so much more than just being able to spell things right. It's hand-eye coordination. It's the different parts of the brain that it uses. And the reality is that exams are still sat via pen and paper. So to do well in your exam, you ideally need to be performing the exam under the same conditions that you learn in, because that's how the brain remembers things. So if you're learning everything by typing on a device and then you have to come to an exam where you have to write everything down, you are at a disadvantage in that examination process. So just as far as the education system goes, I do think that is quite a big problem. And that pincer grip is not just about holding pens. I mean, we need that grip for the rest, for everything that we do in life, don't we? If we don't develop all of these, the ability for all of this quite young, it can be far harder to catch up as we get older.
Yeah, I'm glad you've said that actually. I will bring that point up. So exams are done still writing pen and paper.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I shall certainly be mentioning that then. Yeah, you're right with the grip. Also, I'm assuming on the school curriculum is still art and drawing. So that's, you're learning to grip then, aren't you? Whether it's a pencil or a pen. And I worry, I mean, you see these young kids, how fast they are with their thumbs. I mean, are they going to develop RSI?
Well, possibly. I mean, there are all sorts of issues in terms of the things like tech neck, for example. So when we're hunched over, looking at the device rather than rather than sat up straight, looking straight ahead. So we've got issues in terms of physiological development. But it's how I'd say the biggest problem with devices is the barrier that it poses for us to the real world and to communicating and interacting with those around us. Children especially need that attachment and need that interaction with with everybody, but especially with their primary caregivers in order to develop healthily, and be able to sort of progress and move throughout their lives. If they are not having that opportunity to interact as much as they need to, then they're going to fall behind on all areas of development. And that's what we are seeing now. The research is supporting it. People who, I'm part of a group of health professionals for safer schools. Screens, and that's full of sort of pediatricians, psychiatrists, doctors, speech and language therapists, I work with a lot of schools. Everybody is seeing it when we're working with young children now. We're seeing these developmental delays, and it is attributed to too much time on devices.
And as far as mental health is concerned, I have mentioned this before on this show. When I was at school, bullying was left at the school gates. Now, because of devices, people can be bullied 24/7. Is that what you mean by it can affect their mental health?
Well, it's more complicated than that. I mean, that absolutely is one of the reasons, but in order to be able to regulate your emotions, you need to learn when you're quite young. If you're crying, okay, I'm crying. If you're sad, okay, I'm sad. And to be able to do that, you need a present caregiver to just be able to, the very basics help you understand what you're feeling and help you to regulate those emotions yourself. And what happens tends to happen now, and we're talking around the age of two, three, four here. What happens now is when a child's upset, they're given an external object, usually a device, to soothe them. And it does calm them down because it takes their attention away. But what we're not doing is teaching them how to regulate their own emotions. So then you put the child into the school environment where they don't have a device which can help to calm them down. And then we wonder why children have emotional outbursts, or they're slightly more angry, or they're unable to control their behaviors or their emotions. And it's because we're not teaching them the basics of it. So that's at the very base of it all, is that we need those sort of key emotional regulation skills when we're quite young. But if we don't have that, and then we go into the school environment, we can see how it can become more problematic there. Now, if you're unable to regulate your emotions at school, and you maybe do have an emotional outburst, that can be then off-putting for the other children around you. It can affect your relationships, it can affect your friendships, it can affect how you feel about that school environment as that child. It then affects confidence, self-esteem. So it starts to have this impact on absolutely everything. Then by the time we come to secondary school, we have children who just can go on any app or any platform. They're able to access input from people all over the world with different views, different attitudes. And I don't think children at young, you know, even teenagers really have the critical thinking skills at that age to be able to assimilate that information and decipher which is real and which is false information. So we're over, I think it's an anxiety-inducing world is when you give a phone to a teenager. There's a huge amount of input, like you say there. It never goes away. You never get time to sort of sit and relax. And there's a lot of input that their brains have to try and siphon. And it's too much. And I do think this is why we see it causing increasing levels of anxiety. And it's, to be honest, it isn't just that. It's how it stops the it sort of robs the child of their relationship with the world. So if a child's spending more time favouring their phone, which children, you know, they will because they are addicted to devices, it's easy to access. We all know this, don't we? It's very easy to sort of waste a lot of time on a device. But when you're doing that, what you aren't doing is relating with other people. You aren't doing activities or tasks which you either excel and succeed at, which builds confidence, or you fail at, which helps you to build resilience. You're not moving around. So we need to move around. We need to exercise. We need to see people. We need to sleep. And what we see in teenage years is that these devices have an impact on all of those areas of our functioning.
Yeah. I suppose my question is, what's the answer, though? Because in this day and age, if you take the smartphone away from a child or a teenager, they're going to get more anxiety because of peer pressure.
Only if everyone else is doing it. So it's only become a social contagion because everyone else is doing it. And I don't think this is where we'll be in 10 years. I think parents will start to recognise the risk. I'm already seeing it now where parents are much more stringent with how they use devices. So I think we've got a period of time, which is now, where we have, you know, we do have children on young children on devices. We have teenagers on devices. We now need to work out how do we manage this age group. But I think the generation that comes, you know, after that, so Generation Beta, I think where we are now, I think that those children, hopefully, I'm really hoping that by the time they're getting to that, the eight, you know, 3-4 years old, that parents will be making better choices. The ideal is delay as long as you possibly can. But then when we do introduce, we introduce it gradually and slowly. So much like we wouldn't let a, you know, 2-year-old walk off to the shops on their own. You know, why would we let them just go on a device and do whatever they want? You know, so we slowly introduce our child to the world that they're living in, and we help them to learn how to navigate that world. That's what we do with the real world. And it's the same approach with the online world. So you slowly introduce it, you slowly help them learn about it, learn what's safe, what isn't safe, when things should be reported, how to set restrictions. We're all learning as well, because tech is advancing that quickly that none of us can really keep on top of it. And the answer is, honestly, delay as long as possible. Then when they do have it, it's about setting healthy device use behaviours in your household, such as no phones in the bedroom, charge all of your phones downstairs, no devices at the dinner table. Maybe you have certain, just whatever works for you and your family, work out what the rules are and have a healthy and safer integration of these devices into our world. Because you are right, they're not, you know, they are useful in many ways and they're not going anywhere. So I think we just need to work out how we can healthily use it. You know, it's much like fast food was in the 70s. Everyone was eating it, and then we saw a huge rise in obesity, and now people are much more health conscious, and I think we're in that same position with devices now.
And you mentioned you've noticed parents making a change. What about teachers? At what age are these devices allowed in school?
I mean, this is a problem, because I do a lot of work with schools, and teachers wholly recognise how problematic smart devices are. But then they also recognise that sometimes they're being asked to do work on an iPad. I mean, I would much prefer my daughter to be using a computer or a laptop, because you're learning to type, it's less invasive. You know, she's nearly 12, so she's of an age where I think that's okay. You know, this argument of, oh, well, children need to become literate on a device to keep up with the world. They don't. I mean, a device is so easy that a baby under one can learn to use it, as can somebody who's 70 years old who did not grow up with technology. They are intuitive and easy to use. So we don't, I don't think we do need to be teaching how to use smart devices. I think that'll come within days of getting one. But we do still need to teach children how to type and how to use software packages that are used for work, for you know, writing, for example, on a computer. So we do still need to, we've got, it's nuanced and there's a distinction, but it is an issue with devices being integrated younger and younger into the school environment, and schools not really having, you know, I would argue they don't really have the research to say that this is safe yet. I mean, they might have gone on one piece of research or one marketing campaign and thought, oh yes, this sounds fantastic, but the research now is that the negatives far outweigh the positives.
Yeah, I think there has to be a balance, doesn't there? I mean, I think when mobile phones first came out, I'm talking quite a few years ago, there was an aspect of a teenager having it for safety so they could ring if they were in danger, but it's far outweighed that now, hasn't it?
It has, and you know, it's us as the sort of adult generation trying to get our head around this idea that when the door is locked and the child is at home in their bedroom, that they, you know, we innately, I think unconsciously, because of how we were raised to think the outside world is where the danger was, and inside the home was safe in most cases if you did come from a safe home. But now, actually, just because the child is at home, we are, you know, we are disarmed, our guard is down. But if they're on their devices, they have access to more malevolent individuals than they would ever come across in their local area. And it's we need to kind of change our perspective of that. Actually, you're on the internet. Who are you talking to? What's going on? Because even, you know, you're thinking about the worst kind of case scenario there. But even if they're just spending lots of time on the device, that in itself is really unhealthy. We ideally need to be encouraging them to spend more time outdoors, go outside, go play, see friends. And the teens I've worked with, most of them have said that they would rather see their friends in person. They just do it online because that's what everyone's doing.
Yeah.
You know?
That's all they know, isn't it? That's how they've been brought up.
Yeah.
Well, the book includes practical tips and engaging case studies. Does it show parents how to set restrictions, Charlotte? Because I think that would help.
I haven't got that included in the book because I think these devices are changing so rapidly.
Of course, they're all different, yeah.
They are all different, and they also, the sophistication of the apps, and it changes a lot. And to be honest, you can set restrictions, but children can usually work their way around those restrictions. They're, the children are much more tech savvy than we are, unfortunately.
Absolutely. I mean,
there's advice in the book about how to create a device management plan for you and your family, how to manage reducing devices for children under 8 and then those over 9. And it's hopefully these different change of social etiquette surrounding how you as a family and or you as a unit use that device will help the child to have better control over that device going forward in their life.
Well, I think it's a very important book. It's a very important time. Our listeners can buy it right now from our website, tre.radio. It's called Generation Zombie, Why Devices Are Harming Our Children and What We Can Do About It. And it's by Dr. Charlotte Armitage, who we're speaking to now. Charlotte, do you have your own website as well?
I do, yes. It's www.charlottearmitage.co.uk.
Well, maybe we should pencil something in to speak this time next year and see where we're at.
Yeah, absolutely. We should.
Okay, Charlotte, thanks for your time. You take care.
Thanks. It was good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.